Well, it's got 3 minutes to go, but I don't hear them talking. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial, Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. The preceding program was very pre-recorded. And hi, Max.
You want 2 minutes of nonsense?
Yeah. 2 minutes of nonsense would be great.
See if anything's loaded. No, of course not. Let's see. What sort of nonsense would you like?
Oh, Freeburg? No, you wouldn't have anything like that handy, would you?
Actually, I got Firesign Theater.
Oh, yeah. I'll take Firesign any day.
Let's see how fast I can find it here. How about some Beatles?
Yeah, that's okay, too.
Some dope tunes.
Kinks is good.
Yeah, it's Kinks you wouldn't like. Or would you?
I saw.
It was great during.
Well, put it on quickly because I do want to get on the air.
All right.
I mean, I'm on the air now, but not.
All right. This was
not the way I wanted.
This was great when Mike Sargent was late the other night.
No, I'm not saying anything.
like that happens so rarely.
Yeah.
The radios of the world are tuning in tonight. Are you on the dial? Are you tuned in right? What about DJs is missing? Take you off the air. Was it something that you said to the corporation guys upstairs? It wasn't the pressure, you never sounded down. It couldn't be the ratings, you had the best in town. Somehow I'm gonna find you, track you down. Gonna keep on searching around and around and around and around. Was it something that you heard, or something that you saw, that made you lose your mind? Did you lose control? Did you step out of line? If you're there, give us a sign.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, a potpourri of things that will include some Elisa Quitney, some Jeff Vandermeer. One will be an interview, one will be fiction, and who knows what else. Stay tuned. And good morning. So we have been, figuring out tonight's show. It's a bit of a potpourri, some of which I only recently put together. I saw Black Panther yesterday. I have not yet seen Star Wars, and I think that Starship has sailed, alas, but I did want to see it on a big screen. But regular listeners will know that I was sidelined. I had the flu for the better part of a month. And, it passed. But I did make a big point of sneaking in almost. It's hard to get tickets to Black Panther. And I go to a theater where you get reserved seats. I do love that theater. And so I went yesterday early afternoon, and I was thinking of talking about it today, but Terrence Taylor will be with us here, hopefully live, as opposed to Skyping, next week, and he certainly has things to say about it. And I think I may get some comments from South Africa in the form of our former arts director, Anthony T. Sloan, because he has been all over YouTube about this movie since like 2 months before it opened. And and we reviewed it last week. That is to say, Dan Persons reviewed it last week. And I will replay that next week. And so next week will be all about Black Panther, because I found it a fascinating movie. Almost more of a fascinating phenomenon than a movie, but the movie is pretty darned good, and I will get into that at great length next week. So, this week, some semi-promotional stuff. Okay, I have not yet seen the movie Annihilation, although I did interview Jeff Vandermeer when the second book. Good night, Max. When the second... Max, before you go, what is it that it will be, just in case, the 3 a.m. show?
Will be that jazz show.
Yeah, I don't see anything here that says jazz.
Building Bridges, what's it called?
Building Bridges, Rhythms of Freedom.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't insult the name of that program while we're here on the radio. So. Yes, that's...
Okay.
That's your 2-hour program.
Okay, and in case Hate does come in, or Lister at 3 a.m.
Gary Null all the way to the top and run with it. Hi, gang.
I'll start with Gary Null.
Well, if Hate is here, then Gary Null will be the 5 o'clock program.
So then I would just click off all these others.
Well, yeah, I guess you could do that, too, or just drag it to the top.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Thank you, thank you.
Alrighty.
Okay, very good. Max Schmid, everybody. Okay, so, let's see. If you are near a computer and want to watch what is going on with this studio in reverse, it's backwards, we're in the mirror universe here, then you can go onto Facebook and go to my page on Facebook. And in fact, now let's see. Yes, here it is. Now, there's my page. What I'm going to do. Why am I not seeing this? That's interesting. Everybody else seems to be. See, there it is. There's the live feed there. What I'm going to do is share it onto the Hour of the Wolf page. Da-da-dum, da-da-dum. Share in a group. Do you want to share in a group? Okay. So that you can actually go to the Hour of the Wolf page and watch Hour of the Wolf in progress. And I will take it one step further. I will also share it to the WBAI radio page. Isn't that an interesting concept? Share in a group again. WBAI radio. And so, if you are a Facebook member, you don't have to be, you know, on my timeline, Jim Freund, or you don't have to be a member on the WBAI radio group, but you can watch the show, which on the one hand is really weird and poor, especially if I'm playing something at the moment. On the other hand, if you want to be there, we can chat. I see that you're online. And you can chat to each other, you can chat to me. You have at least one great science fiction writer who's actually in our viewing audience at the time. And he is so far away from here that it is 1:13 in the afternoon as opposed to 1:13 in the morning here. I would gladly switch places. He'll be coming to New York in April and we're going to work something out. It's been too long since we have seen him here. Okay, so, as I was saying, I have not yet seen the movie Annihilation. I have read the book. I read the entire trilogy by Jeff Vandermeer a while ago, and I was really, really taken with that first novel, and apparently others were. So it sold to him as a movie, and not just to anybody, to Alex Garland, whose film Ex Machina I thought was one of the best science fiction films of the last 5 years. I would say that, and the movie Her, and there was one other recent film. I can't even name it offhand. Pardon me, I had to clear my throat when I turned down the pot so the radio listeners weren't annoyed. But everybody on Facebook has been exposed to my throat clearing. So, I have done at least 2 interviews with Jeff Vandermeer. Three, actually, if I've defined his, when he and Anne Vandermeer were guests of honor at Capclave, and I did an official interview with the two of them, and I have to find that recording. Don't know where it is. But I did one with him about 5 or 6 years ago at a ReaderCon with a lot of noise in the background, but that's okay. And we talk a little bit about Annihilation in that and we will be hearing that later. I have decided to go to begin instead with a reading to promote our next New York Review of Science Fiction reading. Now, our next one will be this coming Tuesday, March 6th at 7 p.m. at 388 Atlantic Avenue in the Brooklyn Commons Cafe. I am currently at 388 Atlantic Avenue, but I am on the secret third floor. There is a third floor to that building, and that's where WBAI is hiding out. But on the ground floor is a lovely cafe and a huge room where we hold our reading series. And Elisa Quitney and Nicholas Kaufman will be our readers. And by the way, that can also be watched live, although a little bit better than the quality we get on live stream, which ain't bad. On Facebook Live, we use live stream. And on live stream, in that room, we have three remotely operated cameras and, you know, microphone and all that. Although we have wireless mics and I choose not to use them. Hey, Brian, how are you? Gentleman who for a score of years at least ran the Pacifica Radio Archives. And I'm going to talk to you off air, by the way, Brian. We should email each other. Not Facebook, email. So next Tuesday, 7 p.m., admission is free. Donations suggested. And the two people, one is Nick Kaufman, who I need to get on this show. I've never had him on the show live. Nicholas Kaufman is the Bram Stoker Award-nominated, Thriller Award-nominated, and Shirley Jackson Award-nominated author of numerous novels in the genre, fantasy and adventure genres. I see, I misread that. But you get the idea. His short fiction has appeared in Cemetery Dance, Dark Discoveries, X, The Erotic Treasury, All-American Horror of the 21st Century, and others. In addition to his own original work, he has written for such properties as Zombies vs. Robots and The Rocketeer. He lives in Brooklyn with his wife, Alexa, and two ridiculous cats. Okay, so that's one. Elisa Quitney, otherwise known as Elisa Sheckley. Her mother's name is Ziva Quitney. Her father's name is Robert Sheckley. And for those who don't know, Robert Sheckley is one of the greatest science fiction writers of all time, bar none. Okay? Period. Just, if you're down, if you're out, there are few people you can read that will just lift you, totally lift you. And David Hartwell used to say that it was a proven scientific fact that if you had high blood pressure, reading Terry Pratchett would lower your cholesterol level. And I think that is true. And I think the same could be said for Robert Sheckley. And I think that the same can be said for his daughter, who writes under the name Elisa Quitney. And let me read her bio, and then I'll tell you a little bit more about her. Elisa Quitney, who also writes under the name Elisa Sheckley, is the Eisner-nominated author of numerous graphic novels, and nonfiction titles. We should say prose novels. That would make it a little better. It's my own copy, too. She was an editor at DC Comics / Vertigo and has an MFA in fiction from Columbia. The first issue of her DC Prestige miniseries, Mystic You, was named one of the 15 best comics of 2017 by IO9, and the School Library Journal said that Cadaver and Queen, which is her latest novel, was highly recommending adding this steampunk play on Frankenstein, set in the English countryside against the backdrop of the Boer War, explores themes of belonging, sexuality, and what it means to be human. She lives in Rhinebeck, New York, but is still an Upper West Sider at heart. So, let me just say hi to Facebook people and say hi, Connie. So, let's see. Elisa Quitney. Well, A, she's way cool. B, she is a little bit modest in her own bio. Does it mention that among the graphic novels that she writes were called Sandman, that she is collaborator with Neil Gaiman and has edited this work? She was a primary shaker and mover on Norse mythology, unless I am mistaken. And I'm not sure whether or not she has any role to play in American Gods 2, but the two of them talk a lot, and maybe yes, maybe not. It doesn't matter. Whatever else, whatever connections Elisa has, she herself is a wonderful writer. And just to prove it, we will play a recording of her reading her writing, such as she will do in this very location next week at 7 p.m. Now, where have I put that reading? The computer they have here is, we have three computers, some of them under a KVM, that's a keyboard video mouse switch. And one of these computers is actually enabling us to broadcast. We are off the air for a good portion of the day. However, our internet stream keeps going. And there's the flash drive. And so if I click the wrong button, we go off the air again. So we're actually using something called a Comrex to send our sound out over to the Empire State Building with their usurious rates of rent, which have come close to being the ruination of this radio station. You know, join that club. So let's see. Interviews? No, this is a reading. I know. Here's a secret thing. I can do a search. There's a concept. And there it is. Okay. Now, this is a very quick reading. This comes from the other great reading series in New York, the KGB. Well, and I see now there's more than just two. There's also the Line Break readings that Bill Shun puts together. In fact, there's one with Jen Brissett and other fine, fine readers coming this Saturday. I will stream is poofed. Really? What do you mean, Jonathan? On Facebook is telling me that the stream sucks in other languages. On the other hand, you are you? Oh, well, yeah, you're watching me on Facebook. So you're saying that the, and Max just left. So our broadcast stream is gone. Now you say no video. No, there is video. I know there is video. Or I think there is video. Let me go here because I have actually the video coming up on a different drive. Right? Okay, let's see. Yeah. Oops. Let me go to Facebook. There we are. And click play on that and see if I can see the video. 1212. If I wave my hand there. Oh, it keeps freezing and buffering, huh? Yeah, well, that just says how our internet connection is here, and that also would, I see what you're talking about, keeps freezing and buffering. Well, folks, we will try to buffer through. We will try to make it through as much as we can, but sitting here, there's not a great deal that I can do about that. I know that it's our internet connection here is the problem. And unfortunately, Max Schmid has left the building. Time was that we used to have ops people here 24 hours a day, which is generally what is hoped for. and required, but no longer. We do not spend money on such essentials, largely because we don't have the money. But let's muddle through. If needs be, I will put stuff on SoundCloud. Trix is fine, Lewis. How are you? Okay, so he says, I'm talking to a Facebook person, that the image is perfect. So, what can I say? And he's, you're up in Westchester, right, Lewis? There's probably some kind of a lag. Somebody says, I don't think the issue is at your end, or it would be buffering on what I'm seeing. Well, then. Yes, but more than one person is seeing that. I think it is our stream going out that it's just not very strong. I mean, this radio station was off the air today for 4 hours, and we know that it had to do with our stream and our internet connection. So we were going through a modem to a local cable service, and right now we are just using a chintzy little device. Here, let me show you. Yes, see that? That little thing, that computer there, that is what is sending our signal via internet to the Empire State Building. Oh my God, you're all the way that far north. By the Hudson. It must be beautiful there, at any rate. So he's getting a good signal, and people who are in Brooklyn are not. And that's either Brooklyn, because we have two people from two different Brooklyns. Trust me on this. Anyhow, there's no point in talking about the signal for a long time. Let's rather... why is that playing, huh? I have turned this off. Is there something else? Hold on a second. I have to see. Somebody actually has an editor up here. Sigh. People are very, very sloppy. They don't sign out their accounts and computers. They leave programs open. Here's actually a graph of the WBAI streams. And according to this, actually, we do have about 90 people listening just on this, on one of the main streams itself. So it's there. It's somehow, it is present. It's just not very good at any rate. Let us stop talking about it and let me play you this wonderful reading. This is the time that I actually met Elisa, and this was in November of '09, of, as Simon Lokely would say, the year 9, at the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series. And, well... Okay, now that's very weird. I know what's going on. This is me. This is my fault. Human error. Because I have Facebook up and running so that I can check it out. When I bring up the pot for that computer, I'm hearing the Facebook feed. Okay, so 'tis better. I can... However, since I'm using Chrome, I can actually mute the tab, something people should know about. So now if I bring up that pot, there we go. A pot, by the way, is short for potentiometer. In other words, it's the little thingy that you raise in order to bring the volume up. Okay, now that is up and we're not hearing all that phantom sound. And we can hear the sound that we want to hear. So set your Wayback Machine to November 11th of the year 9 to the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series, the latest edition of which was over about, 5 hours ago. And I hope it went well. I'm sure it went well. And, well, here it is.
Hold on.
Rolling.
We're rolling. All right. Do you buy books? Because if you didn't, you're a bad person.
And the voice that you are hearing there is Matt Kressel, Nebula Award nominee, Matt Kressel.
My name is Matt Kressel. I'm the co-host here with Ellen Datlow of the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series. It's held on the third Wednesday of every month. Thank you for coming. Our next reader is Elisa Quitney. Elisa Quitney's most recent novels include, writing as Elisa Sheckley, The Better to Hold You and Moonburn, a two-part series about a young woman who contracts lycanthropy from her cheating husband. Her next project is a vertigo graphic novel about a little old Jewish lady and the angel of death. Here's Elisa Quitney.
Hi, where do I talk into this? Is this audible? Yeah. So I'm very excited to be here. When I first met Ellen, I was very young and she was very young. She was actually my father, Robert Sheckley's assistant when he was associate at Omni. I was young, I didn't know the difference. I was very, very impressed. And she was very kind to me at science fiction conventions, as I can recall. It's all wrong. I started out writing as Elisa Quitney, which is my mother's maiden name. And at a certain point, I think I frightened my editor and my agent with this book that I'd written, which was a werewolf book. But I'd originally written it before werewolves became so very sexy, and they said, why don't you write it under another name? And I thought, you know, and asked permission back when my father was still alive and giving permission, and he said it was all right to exploit the family name. So anyway, I am not actually two completely different people. I am, and even though this book looks, I think, like a paranormal romance or urban fantasy, it's a little bit different. The first book, which is I think the one they're selling there, tells the story of Abra Barrow, who is a veterinarian who's smart about animals and stupid about men. And her cheating husband gives her a dose of lycanthropy, which in my world is kind of like an STD. and she agrees to move upstate with him. Coincidentally, I left Manhattan and moved upstate. It has absolutely nothing to do with the book. But anyway, when I finally sold it, paranormal romance and urban fantasy had become this huge trend. And I was asked if I would do a second book in the series. And I got very intrigued with what would happen next to Abra up in the country. And at that point, I realized there were certain conventions that had developed to urban fantasy, paranormal romance. One is the kick-ass heroine. I do not naturally write very kick-ass heroines. And the other is this idea that the heroine is sort of man candy, that men are just instantly attracted to her like a bitch in heat. This is not naturally what I write. But I thought, well, this might be interesting to play with, along with the convention of the mousy librarian-like heroine who is transformed. So this is the second book in the series, Moonburn, and in it, it's set mainly upstate, but in this one, my heroine takes a little visit back to New York City, and basically she doesn't realize she's a little irregular in her cycle, first of all, and she doesn't realize that she's coming into heat. And she also doesn't realize that her werewolf cycles are sort of out of kilter. So she gets together with her friend Liliana, who's actually got some secrets of her own, and they're just kind of having a girly day shopping in Manhattan. Or so they think. This is Abra speaking to begin with. Lily, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but the truth is I'm pretty much invisible when I'm standing next to you. As if to prove my point, a businessman stopped talking into his cell phone long enough to give Liliana an appreciative look. We paused at the traffic light, and a souped-up Camaro zoomed past, honking its horn. Baby, called the driver. You looking fine. Liliana tilted her head to one side. What do you mean, invisible? Oh, for crying out loud, Lily, take a look around. I gestured at the cyclist, the construction worker, and the businessman. You're like some kind of crazy man magnet. You can't walk two steps without some guy bugging you. Liliana stared at me as though I were going crazy. Abra, those guys were checking you out, not me. Oh, please. As a general rule, I do not cause men to fall off their bicycles. I pointed to the cyclist who had been too busy watching us to notice the taxi driver opening his door to spit on the sidewalk. The cyclist was on the street rubbing his bruised chin and the driver was yelling at him. Maybe you just don't notice, Liliana said. I put my hands on my hips. Lily, please, don't insult my intelligence. It's perfectly obvious which of us is attracting all the male attention. At that moment, I felt a sharp pinch on my left buttock. I whirled around and saw a young man in an anorak grinning at me as he darted out of the way. Give me a piece of that, he said, as if ordering something from the drive-thru. I'll give you a piece of something, I snarled. You were saying? The light turned green, Liliana took my arm again, and we crossed the street. Hey, said the cyclist, holding up one arm. Hang on. We paused, and he came up next to us, a smooth-skinned young man, a shade or two darker than Liliana. You all right? She asked. Just scratched my knee, he said. Thing is, I think I know you, he said, staring at me intently. I can't remember from where, but I know we've met. I rolled my eyes. Liliana, did you put these guys up to this? Is this the new ego boost? Instead of hiring your own paparazzi, you hire your own stalkers? No, really, I'm not fooling around, said the young man. And then he looked embarrassed. It's just, did you, and I feel this weird connection, like I'm drawn to you. I'm a great believer in listening to the heart, he explained. I'm a great believer in examining the head, I said, moving away from the cyclist. Liliana glanced over her shoulder. So this isn't your typical reaction from the male of the species? It must be a full moon, I said jokingly. Actually, it is, said Liliana, pointing up past the tall buildings at the translucent, swollen moon hanging in the pale winter sky. Almost, I corrected her. It looks full, but it's got another couple of days to go. Because she keeps track of the moon cycles, as you would. Have you started carrying around a farmer's almanac? Come on, country girl, said Liliana. Here's the boutique I was telling you about. And there were three outfits in the window, all of them variations on white shirts and slender black skirts. There were also a few shoes, sexy and clunky in the style of the 1940s. The name of the shop was The Sexy Librarian. You're kidding me. There's an entire store devoted to the sexy librarian look? Liliana grinned as she opened the door. You see why I can never leave the city. It was my dream store. There were very few things in the shop, but all of them were perfect. White shirts that were nipped and tucked in just the right places with one-of-a-kind antique buttons. By the way, in the industry, this is known as girl porn. There were little navy dresses that radiated an understated funkiness that was almost but not quite frumpy. And there were racks of 1920s silky tap pants and stockings with seams up the back. The girls are getting excited. And camisoles and pinks and peaches and russets and plums, the color of the sunset as it deepened into night. Oh my God, I said. I want it all. I knew you'd love it, Liliana said happily, throwing things into my arms. Try this and this. Oh, and this. You have to try that on underneath. I ducked into the dressing room and wriggled into the camisole. I was still buttoning up the shirt when I emerged, but I thought I had the skirt on straight. Well, Lily, I said, what do you think? I think it's sort of like that Hitchcock scene where all the birds start roosting together, said Lily. And for a moment, I didn't understand what she was saying, because I was so surprised. The shop was filled with men. There were men crammed on either side of Liliana as if waiting for a dressing room and other men visible behind them checking out the sexy panties. I had seen the occasional hapless fiancé dragged into a store like this, but never a whole group of them. Huh, I thought, must be the new metrosexual fashion consciousness I keep reading about. And then I spotted the cyclist and I realized that something extremely peculiar was going on. I like it a lot, said the construction worker, who had crammed himself into a corner between the businessman, the cyclist, and a bunch of Japanese tourists. Go try something else on, said the cyclist. His voice sounded strained. "Excuse me," said the saleswoman, a lovely young Asian woman who wore the sexy librarian look very well, "but you're going to have to tell your friends to leave. We just don't have room for this many people." "They're not my friends," I protested. "I don't know who these people are. Is this some kind of mass protest thing, like when that guy was organizing huge crowds to take off their clothes in public?" A slow smile spread over the businessman's pudgy face. "You want us to take off our clothes?" "All right," said the construction worker. "Oh, man," said the cyclist, who had snuck behind me to retrieve my slacks from the changing room. "I can smell her on these." He took a deep whiff of my pants, and I shouted, "Hey," and grabbed one of the legs. "Stop that. You're being weird, all of you." "I need to be upside you," said a Japanese tourist, consulting his phrase book. "Inside," he corrected himself. "Yes?" "I need to lick you from your toes to your ears," said the cyclist. "You touch her and I'll kill you," said the construction worker. "That's the future mother of my children you're talking to." "Like hell she is," roared the businessman. Liliana ducked under his right arm, which was holding off the hard hat, and took my elbow. "I don't suppose you're wearing some exotic new perfume?" "I'm afraid I am," I admitted. "L'air de estrus." Because, it had belatedly occurred to me, there was no other explanation for my sudden transformation from plain Jane to femme fatale. "Liliana, we have to get out of here." "Well, don't change back into your clothes. You're liable to start a riot." Luckily, most of the men were preoccupied with jostling and insulting each other. The businessman and the construction worker were screaming abuse while the Japanese tourists were getting very red in the face as they shouted clipped phrases at the cyclist and the anorak man. The funny thing was, many of the guys were actually quite attractive. The young cyclist had the clean, strong jaw of a scholar athlete. Two of the Japanese tourists were flat-out handsome, and even the anorak man possessed a kind of thuggish appeal. As the tension escalated and the pushing turned to shoving, I found myself watching with reluctant fascination. There was something primitive, almost primal about this scene. Suddenly, the layers of civilization were being peeled back, and what remained was the essential true nature of each individual. The businessman was now a large male, no longer in his prime, whose outward belligerence masked a reluctance to engage in direct battle. The construction worker, by contrast, was a splendidly muscled specimen, warily circling the young Japanese male, who was bouncing lightly on the balls of his feet and crooning to himself in a softly menacing tone. It seemed to me, trapped as I was among these bellicose males, there was no choice except to await the outcome. One male would emerge victorious, his skin damp with exertion, redolent of the powerful male hormones flooding through his body. He would be wounded, no doubt, and yet still possessed by all the savage instincts that had allowed him to conquer the other males. He would come to me then, his body thrumming with adrenaline and lust, his mind half maddened by the intoxicating scent of me. But there would be no use of force. I would still have the power to turn them away, to leave them unsatisfied and burning with desire. Where's my wine? Now the construction worker and the Japanese tourist had removed their shirts, and their bare chests were already gleaming with sweat, as the young saleswoman darted ineffectually about, telling them that she had called the police. I wondered vaguely which one it would be, and how long I would make him wait before permitting him to pleasure me. "Abra, Abra, snap out of it." Liliana shook me, and I stared at her uncomprehendingly for a moment. "We need to get out of here before the police arrive, especially since you may wind up affecting the cops the way you do the civilians." I turned back to the men. "But we can't leave," I said, my heart racing with excitement as the cyclist launched himself at the Japanese tourist, who had just taken down the construction worker with a roundhouse kick. Liliana took a deep breath and said, "If you don't get out of here now, Abs, you're going to end up becoming the guest of honor at a gangbang." I said absentmindedly, as the cyclist kicked his opponent in the balls. How much of Liliana's distress, I had to ask, was due to her being the wallflower for once? Not so nice to be the female none of the males even notice. Anyway, that gives you a little taste of the scene, and I hope you enjoyed it.
For the werewolf comes stepping along. He don't even break the branches where he's been gone. You can hear his long holler from way across the moon. That's the holler of the werewolf when he's feeling blue.
You are listening to Elisa Quitney Sheckley reading from the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series in 2009. Next Tuesday, well, she'll be here, 388 Atlantic Avenue. This is the Not Often Heard Enough, Michael Hurley.
Once I saw him in the moonlight when the bats were flying. All alone I saw the werewolf and the werewolf was crying. As I tear off her clothes, crying, nobody, nobody knows of my pain. When I see that it's risen, that full moon again.
Michael Hurley, H-U-R-L-E-Y. Wonderful stuff. I used to play that song on the air all the time, and I had forgotten his name, and thanks to one of our viewers who was watching this on Facebook Live, remembered. So otherwise I was going to be stuck with Werewolves of London. Somebody recommended a Smothers Brothers song. But I was glad to have refound that one. It's now in my virtual library. This is Hour of the Wolf over WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5, webcasting allegedly at WBAI.org, and intermittently, although it seems to be working okay, on Facebook Live on either my timeline page, Jim Freund, the WBAI group, or the Hour of the Wolf group. So any number of ways to watch. Now, problem is that on Facebook Live, you're not really going to hear the recordings that I'm playing. But on the other hand, we get to chat to each other and look at the camera and stuff like that there. It's really a fascinating thing. The Facebook Live thing is a lot more than just watching me do the show because of that chat, because people can talk to me. It's like taking listener calls without the voice, but I get the words. Jim says that was excellent. Got to look into him further. Yeah, well, with somebody said 20-something plus albums, and on the streaming service that I use, he's got 14 albums listed. He also does the artwork on the covers, which is really wonderful. And that particular song, which album was that from? Armchair Boogie, 1971. But he's still putting stuff out there. Look at that. Plenty of stuff in this millennium. So, Michael Hurley. And before that, of course, Alisa Quitney Sheckley, reading from one of her werewolf novels at the time there, too. And her latest book is Queen and Cadaver. No, I'm sorry, Cadaver and Queen. Wee bit zombie-ish, I dare say. And, as it says, steampunk play on Frankenstein, set in the English countryside against the backdrop of the Boer War. Well, of course. What else would it be? So, Alisa and Nick Kaufman, who is a wonderful writer, and I've never had him on the show or at a reading before, and that's really, a bad on me because he's local, and I don't know why. So we'll have him next Tuesday, March 6th, at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. Please come by. Admission is free, and donations are accepted by all means. But we hope to see you here. 7 o'clock, although you should come early, 7 o'clock next Tuesday, the 6th, at 7 p.m., as I said. Come early, 388 Atlantic Avenue. See, I knew I left something out. At the Brooklyn Commons Cafe. BAI is on the third floor of that building, but it's the cafe that you will want to go to. Okay, enough shilling for that. Let's shill for the radio station. This is WBAI. We are listener-sponsored radio. One of the Facebook people says, that the picture is stuck. I would refresh your browser or whatever it is that you're viewing on, because I'm seeing it on Facebook as well, and it is not stuck on mine. So I guess the mileage may vary depending on how you are watching this. First of all, one of our viewers, somebody who is watching at this very moment, is Chuck Gannon, Charles Gannon, who by no small coincidence, or by a small coincidence, along with Eric Flint, will be the guest of honor next week at Heliosphere. Lunacon used to be the regional local science fiction convention for many, many years. It has had many problems over the last few years, and will not be taking place this year. But Heliosphere will be having its second outing this time out. and Charles Gannon will be one of the guests of honor, Eric Flint the other. And I've had the honor of having interviewed both guests of honor before, and will do so again on Friday at Healy's Sphere. The ever-so-wonderful Hildy Silverman and Chuck Gannon will be doing a session together. I once did a show at a Lunacon with the two of them, and I was thinking, gee, what, you know, Chuck, for the most part, writes hard science fiction, you know, real rocket jockey stuff. Ah, very good. I'm glad that Connie's picture is back. She had to reboot. And you don't necessarily have to reboot. Just close your browser and reopen your browser should do it. Or press the F5 key will also do it. And if you... and Hildy, who is the editor of Space and Time magazine, you know, does a lot of fantasy and poetry and cool stuff. And I was thinking, this is not necessarily a great match. But nevertheless, I interviewed the two of them together. And my God, was it a great match. So Hildy will be interviewing Charles on Friday at Heliosphere. I will be interviewing Charles on Saturday. And then on Sunday, I will be interviewing Eric Flint, who I interviewed at a guest of honor outing at Lunacon when they had three guests of honor. It was Dave Freer, Mercedes Lackey, and Eric Flint. That was quite a trio. And Eric is a fascinating person. He is one of the first people to embrace the idea of sort of shareware-free books, e-books, for Bain Books. Bain Books puts them out for free. This is a program that Eric began, and as far as I know, still runs, and asks you to pay for them, although you can download them and read them first. And he has a fabulous series. He has collaborated with so many writers, including Chuck Gannon, in this universe, mostly published by Bain. I'm trying to remember the name of the main year. Well, at any rate, among the people he's collaborated with are Chuck Gannon, David Weber, let's see. Yeah, he also has a Joe's World series, Rick Spoor, just on and on and on. He is an established editor. So let's see what's going on. Looking at let's click on View Full Schedule. And I'm mentioning all this and promoting Heliosphere because it's the closest thing that we have in New York to a local science, to a regional SFCon. And it should be fun. Oh, my God, there's a reading at 3:30 on Friday. This is next week, not this week, next week. Chuck Gannon, Keith DeCandido, and Danielle Ackley McPhail. That's a good lineup. Then, let's see, are we in a golden age of queer SFF? Maybe. Another guest of honor, Cecilia Tan. Editors share their thoughts. Let's see. Where are the fun books? Travel songs? Paranormal creatures? Ah, Gordon Linsner will be there for that. Do I ever go to Chiller Theater or Icon? I don't go to Chiller Theater. I don't like horror. Very simple. And Icon, I went to one. I did not have a good time. I have never gone back. Okay, let's see. Oh, and yes, it's 6:30 Friday night. Welcome to the Ring of Fire in the Terran Republic, a quick tour and Q&A of our guest of honor's Hallmark Universes. And that's the aforementioned Hildy Silverman and Charles Gannon. Then there's a Hogwarts house party with all the guests of honor. A panel on humorous science fiction with humorous writers. Science fiction movies we love to hate. They're going into the late night now. There are panels going to midnight, including a tribute. It's not a panel. This is an event. A tribute to Zachary and Cecilia Tan, along with friends, will be hosting an erotic bedtime stories party, pajama party. Okay, then Saturday, March 10th at Heliosphere. Oh, Carol Geisander is going to be on a panel. Very cool. And you're watching now too, aren't you, Carol? Okay, and that's Chuck Cannon as well, and some other people. Then a panel remembering Ursula K. Le Guin's legacy. Folks, if anybody from Heliosphere is watching, you have done what is referred to as the most common typo in science fiction, and that's misspelling Le Guin. It's L-E space G-U-I-N, as if it's two words, and remembering is spelled R-E-M, well, you know how to do it, but you've got one E too many in remembering it. You have remembering her legacy. Let's fix that, gang. Okay, joining a writer's group. Gee, why isn't Barbara Krasnoff in that? She very well should be. Yes. Because about the same time, she's on a panel dealing with rejection as a new or even old writer. Okay, Chuck Cannon, rates of technological change, inspiration to do art with WBAI's own Mercy Van Vlack. Guests of honor interview, Eric Flint. Oh, that's Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. That's me with Eric Flint. And I'm really looking forward to that because, as I said, he is way cool. Okay, I'm just looking for highlights, which means stuff that I'm doing. And a DS9 panel, okay. Ken Gale, WBAI's Ken Gale, doing a panel on space opera across mediums. Yeah, I guess mediums is a word, isn't it? Dark Borderland, the Art of the Fight sequence. Okay, then I'm doing, oh, I see, it's three people. We're doing a book and brews session, too. So if you want to meet me, talk to me, I don't know why you would, then it will be me and Mark Oshiro and John Grant. Well, they're worth coming to see. And that's right opposite my partner, Barbara Krasnoff, reading. And so is Teal James Glenn reading then, and other two other good people, Electra Hammond and Susan Hannaford Crowley, and I'm opposite them. I'm opposite my own partner. Darn it. Okay, I don't. There's something called Harold's Recording Studio. I'm gonna have to click on that link. I want to know what that's about. You know, recording studios and all that. Oh, it's Filk singing. Okay, that's very nice. Re-examining childhood favorites through adult eyes. A mass signing Gabfest. I always like those kind of parties. Then 5:30 to 6:45, there will be a seminar called Reading Aloud for an Audience, run by, oh, me. This is something I love to do. I love to do reading aloud. I usually do it for writers, like writers reading their own work, how to read aloud. And that's how I submitted it. And they reinterpreted it slightly and made it reading aloud for an audience, just for everybody. Well, great. Let's do it for everybody. That's most excellent. And that will be Saturday from 5:30 to 6:45. So, yeah, that's, well, an hour, 15 minutes. I might have the ability to give time to somebody else to speak or to try out reading aloud. Oh, it's appropriate that they put me in the Sleepy Hollow room so you can snore your way headlessly during my seminar. Then, aha, yes, at 9 p.m., Blade Runner. That's two words again, not one word. Blade and Runner, two words. And other sci-fi noir, that's so far just me and Daniel Kimmel. And don't know how much I have to say about sci-fi noir altogether, other than I don't, there's a lot of stuff that I don't think is sci-fi noir. Hey, Lawrence, how are you? Another fine, fine science fiction writer joining us on Facebook. I don't mention last names if I don't have permission, but I will mention people's first names. Let's see, Broad Universe is doing one of their things. And then on Sunday, I will be recording an episode of Hour of the Wolf as a part of the con, and that will be with Charles Gannon. And very much looking forward to that. So it's not just an interview, it's this very radio show. I guess I'll broadcast it the following week. And I think that's it for me for the con. ElfQuest. So it basically goes from Friday through Sunday, 6 p.m. Very easy to get through, being up in, you know, it's in the Tarrytown / Sleepy Hollow area. And if you want to know more, go to either Facebook and look at Heliosphere, Helio like the sun, sphere like something round, or heliosphereny.org online, Heliosphereny.org. Okay, as opposed to .org, which is what Tony Daniels often used to say. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, webcasting over WBAI.org, and viewable on Facebook Live. Okay, I am willing to take a chance on the telephone. Good morning, you're on the radio.
When did you say your Eric Flint interview was, please?
I have already forgotten, and I closed the browser. What are you doing there? You're doing
a concert Saturday night, 7 to 8.
So, a concert meaning that you're performing?
Yes, I am. An hour of traditional and filk.
I will. If I don't have a thing opposite that,
I wish you would, because
I hope I will be there.
Because some of it will be child ballads, and I was going to, if you were there, dedicate a couple to you.
Oh, very cool.
I
can just shout out my favorite numbers.
Well, I was thinking, but the versions of Thomas Reimer and Tamlin are too long. I am, however, going to do...
No, there's no such thing as too long.
Well, you know
too long, they don't fit in your time slot. But
yeah, well, one of them I'm going to do is going to be a wonderful North American version of The Three Ravens.
Oh, yes.
I always love that. I wanted to ask you a question. By the way, the year is 1632.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting year, among other things. And what is Barbara doing, by the way?
She'll be reading her fiction.
Oh.
And she's also moderating a few panels.
Oh, a few. And you're doing... And you're going to be doing a lot of these interviews.
I'll be doing two interviews and a lecture, and I'll be moderating two panels.
Tell me again who Charles Gannon is, please.
Chuck Gannon. Yeah. Well, Charles E. Gannon, if you want to get into it. Let's see. Well, aside from being a collaborator in the 1632 universe. That's only relatively recently. His Tales of the 22nd Century, also known as the Cain Reardon series.
Oh.
He's gotten quite a few books nominated for either a Nebula or Hugo or both with Fire with Fire. And then the sequel was Trial by Fire. He's Protected Species is coming up shortly. Let's see, what else? Lost Signals of the Terran Republic.
Oh.
And then he's done lots of collaborations with a lot of collaborators. He's done 3 books in the 1632 series, and he has his and with Steve White, he works in the Starfire series. He's a game designer.
Oh, a game designer.
And novelist, I would say for the most part, his stuff. Oh, and what I mentioned, he was a Nebula Award nominee.
By the way, you know Flint has a. Apparently, according to my friend Roberta Rogo, mystery writer in her own sense, Flint has a new spinoff based on Alexander the Great. Another one of these, something disappears and winds up an island or something. I guess they love islands.
It sounds that way, indeed. And Flint is also, aside from being a wonderful writer, one of the things that I will concentrate on in talking with him will be his work as an editor and entrepreneur and extreme socialist in science fiction, which is something you do not commonly find. And when I say socialist, let me look it up to be sure, because I'm about to make an accusation, which I believe he would be proud of. But before you call somebody a particular thing, let me look it up on Wikipedia.
By the way, while you're looking that up, I wanted to thank you so much for playing Michael Hurley. My God, I have not heard that song in 40 years.
Yeah, just about the same, well, for me, 30, but yeah.
Was he, by the way, he wasn't a member of the Incredible String Band?
No, he was not.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I got him into that. But, you know, there aren't that many werewolf songs around. I can't think of too many. You mentioned Werewolves of London. I've never heard that.
There are a few. At any rate, no. The thing that I was going to mention about Eric, I do not see listed on Wikipedia. I will be talking to him about it next week at the convention.
Ah, well, I'm... So many things to do. So many things to do.
So there's a lot of series and interesting things that he's. But he's a pioneer in electronic publishing. So, semi invented the ebook. And he created the Bain Free Library. That is his baby.
By the way, one of the panels I am thoroughly, for obvious professional reasons, looking forward to is Mythology and SF. I don't know who's doing it. Ken Gale happened to mention it. By the way,
well, Ken Gale's one of the people doing it, I know.
Yeah, but by the way, welcome to the land of the living. It sounded like you and Barbara were under the flu.
Yes, well, Barbara got it lightly. She was only down and out for about 10 days.
You're both all right?
I was out for over 3 weeks.
You're both all right, I assume?
Yes, by now. I wouldn't be doing this show if I weren't.
Ken, by the way, did a spiffy, spectacular job.
Didn't he?
Oh, his interview with Mark Hamill
was a lot of fun.
Oh, that was fun.
And it's also something that I'm fascinated with because Paula mentions on Facebook that he's very, very strongly union. Uh-huh. I think, Paula, that's an understatement. Okay. At any rate, I worked as a both a receptionist at one and talent residuals clerk, which is a job that probably no longer exists. It's now probably totally computerized. And one of the agencies I worked for, the primary one, Lester Lewis Associates. We handled many of the best voiceover people ever, and several people that did cartoon voices, ooh. Bob McFadden, people like that.
Oh,
and
I love voiceover.
We were the number one agency for voiceover work, but we are now talking the late 70s, early 80s, and Lester passed on of old age, at least. Quite a few years ago, and I've got an interview with him. I've got to haul that out somehow.
You know, some
and
of
digitize
the
digitize it.
I love you know, especially on some of the better animated series. But I mean, some of the voices were just spectacular. I mean, you think of people like George C. Scott, who did voiceovers, and Roddy McDowell.
Oh, all the big... And you, but this is something that annoys me.
What?
Is that all these big-name actors... now, Mark Hamill doesn't do a lot of on-camera work, so he's primarily a voice actor. You know, he hasn't done a whole heck of a lot of movies outside of the Star Wars film and films. And Brigsby Bear, a fine, fine movie, by the way. But why is it that when you have a new animated film that every actor in there has to be basically a famous actor rather than a voice actor? There are so many great voice actors out there, so many brilliant, brilliant performers whose I could name names, but nobody has heard of Bob McFadden, Carl Weber, Michael Wager. A few people know Michael Wager because he did work with Leonard Bernstein, and so on and so forth. And not to mention various people like the members of the Firesign Theater, and all they do is voice work, and you don't see them getting good roles. Occasionally they'll be all the way down, like in crowd sequences in Pixar films or something like
that.
So all that I'm saying is...
Yeah.
I love George C. Scott. Give the job to somebody who needs it.
No, I agree with you, but I will tell you this. One of my all-time favorite voiceovers was Kate Mulgrew, who actually once did...
Who doesn't need the work.
No, probably not, but she still did a pretty good Titania, the Fairy Queen.
No doubt, but I can name, 10 voiceover actresses who desperately need the work, who didn't get it, who could do as good or better a job. Let me move on.
No, this is the last question. I know you're going to do it next week. Black Panther,
worth
seeing? Worth going to see?
Excellent film. We'll discuss it next week.
Thank you. All right. Next, I hope you get to the concert.
I hope so, too. I may have something opposite it, or it may be the only time that I can eat, because they actually have me. I'm not going on Friday, so they've got me very, very busy on Saturday.
Well, I'll dedicate the balance to you anyway, even if you're not there.
Okay, good.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. So, Jeff Vandermeer. Jeff Vandermeer, talking about great editors, Jeff and Anne Vandermeer have done some absolutely definitive anthologies. And hold on, I'm going to pot that down and see if I can bring it up here. I don't need technological surprises when I don't want them. And this, good. Got it there. And, oh, this is a full half, over half an hour, so I'm going to hurry up. So, yeah, not on an animated movie. People don't, somebody says, Jonathan says on Facebook, the suits are afraid of unknown names. A celeb is considered box office insurance. Not really true. Box office insurance for whom? For the 8-year-olds that are going to a particular film? For the parents who say, oh, such and such is, you know, Patton Oswalt is doing the voice in Ratatouille? Now, Patton Oswalt was wonderful in Ratatouille, but that isn't what sold any tickets to that particular Pixar film, or for the people that, you know, are Ed Asner in Up. Actually, Ed Asner did help because the character resembled him in so many ways. At any rate, moving on. The Vandermeers are a major force in science fiction and fantasy, first and foremost as editors. But Jeff Vandermeer has moved on from there to becoming a major force in writing. And he has written some darned good stuff beforehand, but he wrote a trilogy that was exceedingly and properly well received. I need to move back to my browser to look. I don't want to get these names wrong. So let me type it in. I was very, very, his current book, by the way, it's getting excellent reviews, is Bourne, B-O-R-N-E, The Southern Reach Trilogy, the first novel of which is Annihilation. Now, Annihilation has been a very controversial, interesting film. It has that all too rare, but has been done a little bit more often. I see what Jonathan is saying. He's saying that he doesn't think the suits are righteous, if that's the rationale. I'm sure that you're right about that. But at any rate, Annihilation is a fascinating novel. He does some really amazing stuff in that book. The characters don't have names. At the end of the book, you don't necessarily know what's going on more than you do at the beginning of the book, but you meet some fascinating people in fascinating situations and places like that. And so, it just floored me, and apparently floored, among other people, Alex Garland, who made a movie. And initially, that movie was scheduled for release in like mid-January. And then somebody took a look at it and saw, well, Natalie Portman is in this and other fine people, mostly women. It's notable. Oscar Isaac is also in it. And Alex Garland, of course, used Oscar Isaac in his previous film, Ex Machina, which is another heady, intelligent science fiction movie. That's also in my, best films of the best science fiction films of the millennium list. And I've not yet seen the film Annihilation, partly also because there are scenes that involve body gore, which is something that I do not enjoy watching, although every critic that has mentioned its presence has said how well it is used. So I will, and because I love the novel so much, I will eventually see it. Now, the movie does not resemble the novel exactly. A lot of major changes were made. Well, with the possible exception of Lolita, and even Lolita, Stanley Kubrick didn't really stick to too many novels either. Barry Lyndon. I think that's probably his closest adaptation where he did not deviate that much from Thackeray. But outside of that, his movie The Shining isn't Stephen King's The Shining. His Clockwork Orange isn't Anthony Burgess's Clockwork Orange. 2001 A Space Odyssey was a novel written concurrent or after the movie. Nothing was written by Arthur C. Clarke involving that film before he was hired during the shoot, before the shoot, while the third draft of the film was written. When the 50th anniversary of 2001 occurs, which will be in, a month and a half, we will talk a lot about that. Not tonight. Tonight, I'm going to move straight on to an interview conducted with Jeff Vandermeer in the year 12, July 14th of 2012. And this was recorded in a crowd-lauded room at ReaderCon. So please enjoy it.
And now we are recording. So this is like, it was what, only 5 weeks ago?
Right, so it's a traveling carnival of an interview.
Yes, we should have, you weren't at the Nebulas this year.
No.
But otherwise we could have had three in a two-month period go from location to location, exactly.
We'll finish up in World Fantasy.
yes, actually we should. We should do that, because I'm going to my first World Fantasy in about... Okay. 15 years?
Yeah.
So, East Coast Toronto. I don't know why I didn't go when it was upstate New York, but
yeah,
I didn't.
Makes sense.
But it is July. It closes on the 14th. Saturday the 14th.
Yeah.
And at ReaderCon, now all of a sudden everything gets interestingly noisy. And we are at ReaderCon in the afternoon, and we are Jim Freund and Jeff Vandermeer, to go alphabetical order by last names. And we've been talking mostly about anthologies. We haven't talked a great deal, did we, about your writing?
I don't think so. And I actually debuted Reading from Annihilation, my new novel, here at ReaderCon.
Yeah.
And it was actually a really...
Which I missed, I'm sorry, but I'll try to get it from Spencer, who's been recording all the readings.
Oh, recording all the readings, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was great, because, you know, the first time that I came to ReaderCon was actually kind of the cusp of my career, because it was... when I had my first major book out, City of Saints and Mad Men, and I remember having two or three people in the audience because the book had just come out, nobody knew, you know, what it was or anything. And coming back to do a reading here for the new novel was great, because I had no expectation after 4 or 5 years of not having a novel out that anyone would even care, and the room was absolutely packed. So I had a lot of fun reading it, and it was the first time I'd read it aloud. It's something that didn't need to be read aloud while I was writing it, and for that reason, I didn't know how, I didn't have a chance to rehearse either, so I had no idea if this actually sounded good aloud. And it actually sounded really good to me as I was reading it, so I was happy about that.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. We have music in the background. I can take in the background and all that, but music poses
music
a legal problem.
Yeah.
It's David's phone.
Okay.
If it's copyrighted, it stops everything.
Right.
But I'm sorry, anyway, yeah. Annihilation and ReaderCon.
So it was nice to read that, and such a total sea change from my other fiction, because it's set in the real world. It basically takes the hiking trail that I do out at in North Florida and kind of transposes it into this kind of weird setting where it is Earth, but there's this forbidden area, this area where an invisible border has come down, and they keep sending expeditions in, and things are going terribly wrong, and they can't really figure out why it's all happening. Meanwhile, the border is expanding, so eventually the whole world is going to be enclosed within this space where all this odd stuff is happening, and so they have to figure out relatively quickly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the premise of the book. But it basically takes North Florida as its setting.
And when is this out?
My agent's actually just sending it around to publishers.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
So
not,
I won't know
not
for
immediately.
A couple months at least. So,
yes,
yeah.
So exactly.
My guess is that it would come out probably in the fall of 2013.
Yeah.
So
lead times have improved from what they used
right,
to be.
Right. And I've already almost completed the second novel in the series. So the expectation is
how many do you project?
Four. Annihilation, Authority, Assimilation, and Acceptance. Are the four.
Okay, the four stages.
And they all kind of riff off of those words in terms of how they deal with it, sometimes kind of ironically and in ways you wouldn't expect.
Oh, that's really cool.
So, a lot of short fiction suddenly, because it got out from under the weird, I've gone back to writing a lot, so it's been good.
Yeah, I mean, it's been sort of an interregnum going from editor, publisher, and now back to writer, which is how I first knew your work.
Right, and it works in cycles, too, in terms of reader recognition. Like, until I started having more short fiction coming out again this year, I was beginning to get pegged as the editor or the guy who wrote Steampunk Bible. And I was really, that's why I was really glad to see an audience there, to have the sense that even after a few years... there's people who are interested in hearing the next thing, because you know, when you have a book out every 4 years, which is basically what I do, the landscape changes. The publishing landscape can change entirely, and you don't really know what to expect.
What are the biggest sea changes in publishing from when you started?
Well, I have to say the.
And you're responsible for a number of the sea changes.
Well, I wouldn't say responsible, but did manage to get in on the. On some of the waves of it, and also to just kind of...
on the crest of the wave, shall we say that.
Well maybe, I guess. I mean, certainly, I think some people see book life as having been ahead of the curve in terms of talking about e-books and talking about the internet and how it affects a writer's career and life. I think there's two competing things happening. There's these evangelicals out there for e-books,
mm-hmm.
like this guy Conrath. Who's been very successful with self-publishing. And there's nothing wrong with being successful with self-publishing. It's a great tool, but you have this issue where what I would call fundamentalists about certain forms of delivery. Say, this is the only way, and this is the true way, and traditional publishers suck, and so on and so forth. And then you have the people who support the traditional publishers saying, ebook publishing sucks, and all self-published authors suck, and all that kind of stuff. And,
mm-hmm.
and really what it is that we have this opening up of all these tools. And to give you an example of how that affects me as a writer who's kind of, I hope, in the middle or whatever of a career where I have projects that are commercial enough to be from major houses and projects that are more quirky that are out from indie presses, is that it gives me a sense of relief and calm. Which is to say, with Annihilation, there are a lot of opportunities. Let's say for whatever reason, a major publisher doesn't want this book. Or for whatever reason, there's a deal that I'm not particularly fond of. Well, I know I have the ability to publish it myself if I want to. I could even go Kickstarter. There's all these opportunities that I can do, and of course, you don't know until you start them as a mid-career, mid-list author whether you actually will be able to bring your audience with you that way. But there's a good chance that you will.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there. You know, so. So that actually gives you a little bit of freedom and a little breathing space, and so I'm really not nervous about the process of submitting this novel. Where in the past, I would feel like there was a lot more writing on it, if that makes sense. And so in that way, I think it's a good thing. I wish people would stop talking about it as being like traditional publishers versus Amazon or things like that, because it's really about...
I have a lot of... I'm aside from being a fan and interviewer, et cetera, I'm also a technology reviewer and involved in all that. And, you know, I'm somewhere between them. Yes, I recognize... not necessarily Amazon, but Evil Empires, and there are several that are involved in books at this point, and all kinds of court cases
and
stuff like that. But the truth is somewhere in between. B, there are no absolutes in this, and people are going to have to learn to make adjustments. And distribution channels are changing, will change. Books and print won't go away, but ebooks are here, and they are part of the channel. Self-published books, 20 years ago, if somebody asked, can I be on your show, I published my own book.
Right.
It's like, no, you're a vanity press, unless maybe Sicilian Tan or, you're a vanity press. And now it's like, okay, I like the idea of an editor has said, who has vetted the work.
Yes.
Number one, they have said, this is good enough for other people to read. Number two, they've taken a look and hopefully blue-lined it or done something to it. But there have been some darned good things that have come out from vanity presses, or what I call vanity presses, and other people call DIY publishing.
Well, I think one misconception, too, when people talk about the traditional publishers is the idea that there aren't editors anymore. I mean, my editor on Shriek and afterward, Liz Berinsky, changed the book by about 40,000 words, and I was extremely glad of it. Like, 20,000 went away, and I added another 20,000.
Yeah.
And every book that I've had, they've all been with different editors, I've always had somebody who was proactive in a good way. So that doesn't go away, and I actually know a lot of the indie authors who have been successful hired an editor to develop mental edit and copy edit their manuscript before they put it up.
Yeah. They're freelancers who do that.
Yeah. It's just another delivery system for books, and I agree with you that print books aren't going to go away. And it's just kind of silly to kind of pit one thing against the other. What I really don't like, though, is people like assuming a paradigm has already changed. Like, I remember at ICFA, someone after a panel that was partly about the Weird
Which
anthology,
is, for those people don't know, the International Conference on Fantasy A's.
International Conference on Literature of the Fantastic, something like that.
Literature of the Fantastic,
There were a couple of people in the audience who asked how we had funded The Weird and how we had self-published it. And we said, no, it went through traditional publisher, we got an advance and everything. And they were like, people still do that? And so there's certain aspects of the information that's out there that make it sound like...
And I hope you kickstarted them out of the room.
We did, because it's kind of ridiculous, but that's what I mean about people start to make the future real by buying into all these assumptions and repeating them and repeating them to the point where they're not just predictive, they become the reality. And
yeah.
They, in an odd way, you know. And so I try to fight against that as much as possible, because I truly believe 5 years down the road, we still don't really know how all of this is going to pan out.
Yeah.
So anyone who sits there and tells you they know what's going to happen in 5 years, there's a good percentage chance that it's not actually going to happen that way.
No, it's not. And there will come a time that legislation... There's going to be legislation on it. We're already seeing the start of legislation, maybe ill-advised, maybe not.
Right.
But the questions are being asked and fought. Right. Lobbies are being created,
exactly.
And money is being sent to tell their side of the story in each case. But on top of that now, I'm interested in the whole idea that people... I mean, how many people do I hear? I'm going to write a book, and I've got it already there on Kickstart, and it's like... I wonder what the IRS thinks of all this.
Well, that, and also, I have to
tell you... It's income.
The thing about Kickstarter is, I've looked at least a couple projects, and it's kind of, I don't know why I find it funny, it's actually not funny, but a couple of people who have never written novels before doing Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
And then the reality strikes when they actually get the Kickstarter money that, oh, I actually have to write this thing.
Yes, and then the writer's block.
Not only the writer's block, but then things go horribly wrong, because in some of these cases, they actually can't write a novel, because... One thing about self-publishing and the ease of it is it's beginning to give the sense that everybody can be operating at what I would call at least a kind of competent level of technique. And it's not actually true. It's great that it's all out there. And sometimes you'll find a rough-hewn genius who is just not... It reads horribly in a way, but it still works. But yeah, it's giving this impression that, you know, everybody can do this. It's just a matter of putting out your ebook.
Yeah,
it's not a matter of honing your craft. It's a matter of putting out your ebook.
But you know, 80 years ago, it was Mimeos.
Yeah.
No, or hectographs, anyway.
It doesn't hurt anything. It just all becomes part of the white noise behind everything that then jumps out and release. So it doesn't hurt anything. And if somebody wants to self-publish something and it sucks, then...
But some things have changed. Certainly, I think the successful independent press has totally changed the landscape. And you've been very successful with the works of Dr. Lambshead and various writers like that you've discovered.
Yes,
I guess we have to explain that, don't we?
Well, I think that was in the first part of the interview, so I think we're all right.
It was. Okay,
but,
good.
These
are favorite books of mine, so I have to mention
that. No, I understand. I think it is true that there's been a more level playing field. It's just simply there's more access to media outlets and whatnot. And so... And also, I think the partial collapse of the publishing industry at a certain point in 2008 and whatnot actually aided the indie presses as well. They kind of picked up some of the pieces, some of those authors who were no longer being published by the large presses. And you see larger independents having print runs that are pretty much the same as the median for large publishers, too.
Well, those same companies 10 years ago I would have called small presses.
True.
Now I would call them independent.
Right. Exactly.
Same
they're
thing.
Not,
they're not. Yeah, I mean, they're powerful forces.
Yeah. So you can have a good career and get a decent advance outside of the New York big publishers. And it's just, again, it's the example of you need this variety. You need the variety because it actually, I think, helps creativity. It's like I know if I have some crazy-ass idea, like Dr. Lamb said, and if it doesn't pan out that it's actually as potentially have some commercial appeal like I think it thought it did, there's still outlets for it where it can be successful for the audience it's meant to reach. So I think overall everything is going well. I just, you know, I'm just not knowing where this is going to end up, not knowing what's going to happen with these lawsuits. It does kind of, you know, make you a little nervous about
what's going to transpire in the future.
Right.
I have a feeling it will work out in the end. And I have started sometimes on one end of the issue and then boom, berated by friends of mine in the room at this moment about that very issue. And only to discover that the changing landscape of publishing. No, I had a fine writer on the air by the name of Elijah Johnson, who Elijah Don Johnson is a top writer, and agent Eddie Schneider, who represents E.C. Myers and lots of other people with the Jabberwocky Literary Agency. You know, and with wit and humor, we have had disputes over these very judicial things we have been discussing here. And, yeah, I don't know how it will end up. I do believe it will work out in the end one way or the other. There's no good guys in this, in the current battles. And by the time this is broadcast...
Something else may have happened,
and different battle lines and different areas may have been in intellectual property and monopolies and trusts.
Sure, and then in about 40 years, when civilization collapses, all the e-books will go away.
Again, yes.
And we'll be left basically in the rubble with our print books anyway, so the issue will be moved by that point if you want to take the really long view.
Well, when you take the really long view, it will all have changed. There's no question about that. But all that aside, go ahead. I was going to take a left turn here, which is, what other media have you not done? What media have you not done?
Well, I'm talking right now about doing a graphic novel of Finch with a guy who's done some work for Neil Gaiman and Alan Moore, and we both have the same vision for this, which is to turn it from third person to first person for the parts that are narrated by Finch, but then to add things, because in episodes of comics, it's very ordinary to have extra pages at the back that have some relevance to the main story, but you know, they may not be an actual extension of it. So you would actually have Finch, as it is in the novel, on the page, but then at the end of each episode, you'd go away for three or four pages with one of the characters. When they walk out of the scene from Finch, you'd see what happens on their end. So you'd expand it to the other characters in very interesting ways. Like in Finch, you have these kind of human traders who let themselves be colonized by the people, the inhuman creatures that have overtaken the city. And so you get to see a partial when he's not being a secret policeman. Mm. So you'd see him sitting down to a cup of tea, talking to his wife, and that's one very simple example that would kind of balance out the extremes in which you see these characters.
Right.
But then you would also see things that actually relate to plot. Like you'd see Finch's girlfriend going off, who's a double agent, and you'd see all kinds of things related to that. So it would expand the whole thing. It wouldn't just be rehashing it. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is, for Wonder Book, the book on writing that's illustrated, Gregory Bossard, who does some work for Lucasfilm, is going to animate this prologue fish, which is giving an example of the structure of a story in the form of an animal. And he's going to actually animate that so we can do a tutorial, a 5-minute tutorial based on that image. So we're going to move into video that's not really book trailers, it's additional material.
Yeah, it's actually certainly part of the...
of the book, of the experience.
And who knows, given where media will be going... One second. Excuse me! Do me one favor. Talk, yell, don't yell. We're actually on the radio.
Sorry.
Thanks. I don't mind the background noise and all that, but when it gets to yelling...
Yeah, but you should move aside to see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, here's the microphone, and we're interviewing. Okay. Yeah, sorry. So you were talking about the trailer. But not the non-trailer.
Right.
So I was saying that you... I'm going to start again. I'm going to say, I'm sorry, you're right. Had I thought none, I was going to do this, I would have had a little, we're on the air sign. But this was impromptu. It's a microphone. Welcome to the 21st century. Anyway. In fact, there's one of these in every room for every event. They're using these. Yeah, every room, every event for the last 5 years at ReaderCon. Anyway, never mind. It's the same one standing up. Anyway. All that aside, it's a Zoom H4, this is H2. It doesn't matter.
This is all a little bit off topic, people, but hey,
books.
There you go. You're hearing the interview raw.
Instead of going to an electronic piece of equipment, you would instead have a book that you could open up, the print book, and would have the media within it.
Right, that's true.
Is what I was thinking.
That's
so
true, and it's possible the publisher would want to do that. I just don't know. I think Abrams Image is a great coffee table book publisher, but I'm not sure they've really made the transition yet to thinking about that type of thing. But it would be awesome. You open the ebook, and that Prologue Fish trailer is right in there where the image is. Just like you see Wired Magazine online on your iPod, and it's sometimes got moving images and whatnot.
Yeah.
So that would be the ideal.
But I've also seen print books with holograms.
True, true.
Which we could not have imagined 15 years ago.
But I think we're probably going to have things more like transparencies. Like if we have analysis of a text, then you'll have different ways of viewing it through the transparency. The other thing we're doing in this book that I think is actually fairly unique is there's this very brave Clarion student from 2010, Leah Thomas, who has a story that she workshopped when we were there, and it didn't quite come together, and she kept getting encouraging rejections from all the major publications. So it was one of those stories that's actually perfect to workshop because it has potential, but it hasn't been accepted by those editors. So she allowed us to sacrifice it at the back of the book in the appendix by having Ellen Datlow and Liz Gorinsky and Gardner Dojois and other editors in the field do their normal analysis, edit, critique of it, and that's going to be in the back of this book. So you'll get to
Very
see what
cool.
each editor, what the differences were, Nick Mamatas. You get to see what their editorial vision is and how it differs one from the other, and I think that'll be really, really useful. So.
Yeah. I think so too. I actually have thought I could even propose it. A writing to have, but you're almost done, to show the process of what happens in a writer's group.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, we have enough time to put all kinds of stuff in the appendices, and we're still working out exactly what we want in there.
So
there's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So taking that, the offsets of print. Have you ever thought of hypertextual or interactive work?
Yes, I actually have, and the main thing stopping me is the time involved, because there's some very complicated effects that I would like to do. I have some very interesting mirroring ideas, for example, connected with Annihilation, or even retroactively going back to one of the Ambergris novels and creating an Ambergris kind of setting that also has bits of story embedded in it. But I want things like, if you click on the wrong thing, it looks exactly the same, but it's not, when you start to explore it again. And all these things in layers that would require a lot of time, and we're already pushing it in terms of the number of projects we have, and that would have to be funded by Kickstarter, or there would have to be some major funding behind it to pay for the time involved. But I think there are a lot of opportunities are not being taken advantage of, and I would really love to sink my brain into exploring it. But it's just one more thing that you'd have to, you know. But I think that that's totally underutilized, underthought about.
I've been very disappointed for many years now since I saw a work by Tom Dish called Amnesia that came out from Harper and Row.
Right.
which for those people who know imprints, that dates it about 30 years ago, or 30 years ago. And that was wonderfully thought out, interactive fiction, and nobody has picked up on that. And that wasn't just like a choose your own adventure thing.
Right. No, but, I absolutely agree. There's another idea I wanted to do. Finch actually came out of the fragments of another novel, which was actually called Fragments of a Drowned City.
Right.
And the idea there, and it was just impractical, was much of the story, and it turned out to almost be like an alternate universe version of Ambergris, which is why I set it aside. It didn't fit where I was going with the details of Finch, but it would have been literally these waterlogged pages in an art installation. And you would put the novel together from the different pages, and it would be organized in such a way that no matter where you started, it would make some causal sense, along with video installation, along with all kinds of other things. And theoretically, you could transfer all of this to the internet, to a hypertext kind of thing involving multimedia and image and everything else as well.
Yeah.
And allow the reader to assemble the story. And, you know, but yeah. But there would be a real authorial intent behind it, because you'd have to write it in such a way that you could, the reader could randomly do this and still have it make sense.
It is doable. So. There is a very old piece of software called Cosmic Osmo that simply built a cosmos, therefore the name. The same people, they did this wonderful environment, and then they steered away from it. They made mist.
Right.
But Cosmic Osmo, they first they did the manhole, then Cosmic Osmo.
If I had a chance to do something like mist, I would jump in 5 seconds to do that.
Yeah.
But there are simpler ways of doing this, too. I mean, I've
But the work before mist was even better.
Yeah, really?
Yes, yes. Cosmic Osmo is what I,
Okay.
Is the one I advise people. It's crude technologically, but in terms of storytelling, it's superb.
But there's simpler ways that you can just do any day. I don't know if you call it hypertext or not, but for example, on Facebook one day I posted a status that was actually the beginning of a first-person story. But in such a realistic mode that people thought it was my actual status and they started responding to it. And their responses, I then answered in character.
Ooh.
And then the story started getting more and more disturbing, and people started responding in more and more startled ways, and I kept responding in character. And by the end of that process, I actually had the story written because of responding to their responses. And so it was just a very simple way of building a story using social media. By kind of misdirection. And if, you know, if they'd known there was a storytelling thing, it would have not... it wouldn't have happened the same way. They would have started interacting with it in a different sense.
Yeah. Reminds me of guerrilla theater, guerrilla movies.
Late 60s,
early 70s. There was a lot of that kind of thing going on. So, the unions put a stop to that.
So that's underutilized too, I think.
Yeah, it really is.
Repurposing Facebook and Twitter in different ways for storytelling.
Yeah, I'm not big on the idea, oh, here's a novel on Twitter that's going to be published in the New Yorker. It's nothing but a gimmick. But but what you did with Facebook is very interesting. And
I'd like to do more of that too.
Yeah.
But it does require the element of surprise sometimes.
Well, you may have to create some new accounts there.
Right.
That would be Wales. It would be fun to try that with the Google Hangout.
Yeah, I haven't gotten into the Google stuff yet.
It's a different metaphor that involves audio and video and texting.
Yeah.
But people can do it from their phones, and it's all in real time.
Yeah.
So that's the fun of that. Or, maybe we shouldn't say this here, maybe we should try it as a radio event. A lot of interesting things can be done with the radio.
Get into trouble for that?
No, not if you do it properly. Not if you do it properly. We at WBAI have had any number of these things, including professional hoaxers like Alan Abel and folk like that through the years. You know, as long as nobody's saying, you know, take money and mail it to me at.
Right, right.
You know, then and yes, Orson Welles did get into a certain amount of trouble for it, and he loved it every second.
I don't know if I have time for trouble.
The only trouble he really ended up with was a press conference.
Oh, okay. Well, that's manageable.
Yeah, and it helped make his career.
Yeah, true.
So there you go. Okay, so we've got like 2 minutes left for this edition.
Right.
You know, to be picked up hopefully at World Fantasy at some point. We want to both, and you're not going to Capclave this year.
No.
But we should have started last year when you were the GOH. Actually, we sort of did, but I don't have on tape.
I think you're right.
I did moderate a panel with you.
Yes, that's right.
But didn't get a recording of it, darn it. About World Fantasy is when I want to be broadcasting this. Mm-hmm. So when are each of these books coming out? Well, we don't know, of course, about Annihilation.
Yeah, Wonder Book is coming out in June of 2013. Steampunk Revolutions anthology is actually coming out for World Fantasy, we believe. We're doing a feminist science fiction anthology that will be coming out in May of 2013.
You already know the date.
Yes, okay. We do know the date. We're really, really shooting for that so that it can be released at WISCON.
Yeah, because, okay, right.
And I'm trying to think of the other books because there are quite a few of them, but we'll be able to announce a few more anthologies, but most of those will not be published until like the end of 2013. And there probably will be a follow-up to the Steampunk Bible. I'm talking to Abrams right now.
Right.
That might come out, well, probably wouldn't come out until 2014.
Yeah. I think it's safe to tell listeners that there are, I'm a huge fan of anthologies that help define a field. And I think it's very safe to say that some of the anthologies you have done, if people want to know more about steampunk, the weird, whatever it may be, take one look at the thickness and the quality of each of these books, and thou shalt know what that field is. But also, but as a writer, you've always been a tremendous amount of fun in doing the weird little, from the huge to the quirky.
Well, I'm excited about the new novel because I think, because it's set in the real world, it's first of all easier to describe for readers, and I think it opens up a different audience too. And so I'm excited about that. I'm excited about getting out of Ambergris for a while. And I'm excited about doing something that feels so personal because it's set in North Florida, more or less, where I live and have lived for 20 years now. So
yeah.
So it's all good, and ReaderCon's been amazing as usual. So.
Oh, it always is. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me again.
And we'll pick up shortly after. With any luck, listeners will hear this thing in the far future about 2 minutes from now.
Right. Thanks. You're a very good interviewer.
Okay. That's thank you, Jeff, for those kind words. And I'm a very good interviewer. I don't think I'm a very good interviewer. I think what I am is a good host. There is a difference between the two. So, we have, just moments left to the show, especially because I saw that Hapte Selassie has entered the building. He is filling in for Lister, who is down and out, sadly, horribly, with a nasty bout of the flu. This thing just isn't clicking correctly. But actually, from that point, it ought to be all right. So let me start my outro music, which I don't have queued up, and tell you that this has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I would like to thank you very much for listening. You can write me, contact me at Jim at OurWolf.com, and you can find me on Facebook. You can join the Hour of the Wolf group. You can watch me on Facebook, and so on and so forth. So please, everybody, be good to each other. Take care of yourselves. Stay healthy. And yeah, when I say be good to each other, I mean be good to each other. Have a good morning. Next week, Black Panther discussion with Terrence Taylor, and I'm going to try to invoke a good friend from South Africa. Stay tuned for Hapte Selassie.
Everything is better.
Oh, it sounds loud in my ear.
Okay. And while we're on the air, sorry to interrupt, but very, very important, do not close at all this particular browser. This, yes, that is what we're broadcasting through.
Close that browser
and we're off the air.
I see. Is it frustrating would be the word, or the attempts at frustration, you know? But 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 2 minutes after 3 o'clock. The program you just heard, Of the Wolf, with Jim Freund. Next week, Jim?
Next week, Black Panther.
Next week, Black Panther.
Yeah,
Jim Freund's covering Black Panther.
Have you seen it?
And no, not yet. The hope is to go see it today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see it before I come back Saturday morning.
Yeah, there is a theater right near here.
Okay.
Called the Alamo Draft House.
Oh, okay.
That is the best place to see it.
Oh.
Because you can reserve seats.
Oh, okay. That's down the road right down here by Court Street.
Yes.
Okay, now I know.
No, not by Court Street.
No?
It's over by Junior's. Like,
Okay.
Ugly, horrible.
Oh, okay. I'll find it. But if it's by Junior's, we'll find it.
Yes.
I'll get the directions to it. But we were saying that Jim will be back next week, midnight?
At one.
Yeah. He'll be back at one.
I haven't said it on the air. You know I'm going to try to get on the air to discuss Black Panther. Anthony T. Sloan.
And... Jim will be covering the film because, of course, it's sci-fi and so on, so for futurism, whatever those terms are. But
let me just correct that.
Yeah,
it's none of the above. It's comic book.
Oh, it's comic. Oh, there's
it's not science fiction.
Oh,
it's not Afrofuturism Octavia Butler novel.
It's comic book.
It's a comic book.
Comic book made movie. Well,
yes.
Comic book. Let me just try not to
it's
be
a.
I'll just comic book.
Yeah.
But Jim will be discussing that next week. That is the 8th, the morning of the 8th.
Yeah.
He begins at 1 a.m. So tune in for that. And at 4 minutes after 3 o'clock, it is time for Burn Baby Burn with Lister Huon Lowe. My name is Habte Selassie, and I'm sitting in for Lister this morning. I know our sound quality, it's terrible. I was trying to hear on my way in, and atrocious. But our apologies and our gratitude that you're still hanging with us. What good, Jim?
Thank you. Maybe
cool. Oh, good, yeah. All right, cool. So where are we now? Let me try this. It's working.
Xavier de Massacre. I'm recruiting soldiers for Jah. Recruiting soldiers.
I'm recruiting soldiers for Jah-Army. Recruiting soldiers. Jah time is now. I can tell you only to fight against Jah and the saints. But there is confusion in high places about the lamb that was slain. And all these years I hear them say, and his saints, but that won't work. To fight against Jah and his saints, hear them praising old Marcus Garvey, hear them exalting his name. Oh, he's great, yeah. Fight.